Hello and welcome to The Laydown, a podcast where three booksellers from Gibson's Bookstore in Concord, New Hampshire chat about all things literary. My name is Ryan.
I'm Hillary.
And I'm Kelso.
Hello, hello. How are we doing?
Surviving!
February's the best, one of the best months of the year. You know why? Because we get more than 10 hours of sunlight in a day for the first time since winter began. And that is why everybody starts getting spring fever at this time of year.
Oh,
I do anyway.
I totally do. Yeah. Oh, I'd never really put that together. That's cool. We also just had Winter Institute this past week, which was virtual this year. It's crazy because I think Winter Institute last year. So Winter Institute is one of our, you know, annual conferences for booksellers. It's hosted by the American Booksellers Association. And I think last year that was like the last thing. That was the last like normal thing before everything shut down. Yeah. So it's weird that we had Winter Institute again, and this time it was all virtual. It was fun. I learned some things. I think there were some great panels. We got to have a whole panel on romance and specifically queer romances, which was really fun. And there were some great authors and keynotes, and yeah, it was a good time. It's fun to be a bookseller and to be surrounded even virtually by other booksellers. Let's talk about what we've been reading. I just started listening to The Brightlands by John Frame. Anyone who likes Stephen King, and I don't just mean like anyone who likes horror novels. I mean specifically Stephen King and like specifically like the twisted, dark, uncomfortable Stephen King.
Yes.
Like that. It's that. The general plot is a guy comes back to his hometown to kind of, he's worried about his younger brother, and he gets there and that night his brother goes missing. And that just spawns this like mystery, and there's a weird vibe of the whole town, and there's a whole lot of homophobia and racism mixed in with this town that's just obsessed with football. And like the football stars get away with literally anything, maybe even murder. And then there's also this aspect of like, you know, it's a horror novel. So there's this, you know, unseen something, some sort of like beast in the depths that's like maybe making people go crazy or something. And there's this like very twisted sort of like Pleasure Island aspect to the novel. It's bananas. Very dark, very creepy, and very like lots of like disturbing imagery, and yeah, it is interesting. I'm almost done with it. I'm listening to it on Libra FM, and I have, gosh, like an hour left. I think I'm like right in the thick of the the ending, and oh my goodness. But it's good. It's good. But I will say, like, it is particularly good for people who really like Stephen King. They really like, you know, It. It has a strong It vibe. So I'm listening to that. I just finished a bunch of just awesome ones. I finished The Chosen and the Beautiful by Nevo, which is a magical retelling of The Great Gatsby told from Jordan Baker's point of view. And she is a friend of Daisy's, and in this novel, she is queer. She is an Asian immigrant. She has an affair with Nick Carraway. So she's like at Gatsby's parties and things like that. So you get the novel of Gatsby, but through the eyes of like someone kind of on the side who's like part of it, but not like all the way part of it. But with this amazing undercurrent of magic and deals with the devil and things like that. It's really gorgeous. And then I also finished Amari and the Night Brothers, which is so good. It's so good. It's by B.B. Alston. This book, this is what I'm going to recommend to kids who are looking for just a fantasy. They want magic. They want whatever, wizards and things like that. And also kids who want spies. This book, it is so much fun. The world building is awesome. And it just, it totally feels like Spy Kids plus Harry Potter. The magic is awesome. The characters are fantastic. There's twists and turns. And again, like, it's middle grade, so you'll read it really quickly, but like, I genuinely enjoyed it. Yeah, so I'm going to be recommending that to like every kid who walks into the bookstore and be like, hi, have you read Amari and the Night Brothers? Here you go. and I'm so looking forward to more from that world because, oh my goodness, it was amazing and adorable and I'm obsessed with it. And then I also, Hillary, you also read this, The Echo Wife, I just finished. Kelso, did you read The Echo Wife? Mm-hmm. So it's by Sarah Gailey. It's very, very different from their first novel, which was Magic for Liars. But this one is more sci-fi with like a true crime aspect almost. It's about clones and double lives and murder and, really well written.
I would actually characterize it as being pretty dark.
It's wicked dark, actually.
Very much about, abusive relationships.
Yeah.
And it's told from the point of view of a woman who's a scientist who has developed a way to make adult clones very quickly. They're not really on the commercial market yet, but the plan is to use them for parts, basically, or as body doubles or whatever. But these clones have no rights, and they're not supposed to reproduce. And this woman discovers that her husband has cloned her, and is trying to live this ideal, happy life with her own clone.
And like a more, like plastic Barbie version of her.
Yeah,
like he programmed her personality so that she doesn't argue with him. Very Stepford Wives. It's very eerie. And the very first time that basically she gets a call from the clone. And without giving the main plot away, I will just say that the clone shows up and she's got a baby bump. And that's not supposed to be possible. And that's kind of where the story kicks off.
Yeah.
And it's very dark. There are really interesting implications throughout. It is, I really, really enjoyed it.
I thought it was a very thoughtful book. It really resonated for me. You know, I found myself really thinking about it a lot.
So that's what I've been up to. What about you guys?
I've been listening to a romance novel called Love Lettering by Kate Claiborne. So I just started this book this morning. It is a library overdrive app. Together We Read, so you can borrow it from your local library if they have the Overdrive audio and ebook app for free, and it's there's no wait times or holds on it.
Nice.
Thing that the library is doing, and February's pick is this book, and the book is about this young woman in Park Slope in New York City, and she has made her fortune and fame on calligraphy and fancy hand lettering. So she makes custom journals for New York's elite, and she does these fancy hand letterings for weddings. So menus and the announcements and anything formal she normally does. And she has this innate skill where she can read signs that other people miss. She can just pick up on like things that will be happening to somebody before they happen. And one day this very handsome young man named Reed Sutherland comes in and his gorgeous fiance show up to employ her for her calligraphy skills. And she knows that their upcoming marriage is doomed to fail. And we open in the first chapter where Meg is sitting and working at her desk, and Reed comes in and he holds up a piece of paper, and he has no ring on his finger a year after they had been wed, and said, "How did you know that my wife and I were not going to be together?"
Oh, snap.
And so the plot then starts going into how she figured out something big happening to Reed's fiance, and she is trying to weave this secret into their wedding programs and try to counteract the patterns, whereas Reed is really sharp-eyed and focused, and he's pattern obsessed.
Okay.
And it's this really cute contemporary romance novel about two people who eventually will fall in love, most likely, and have a happy ending in this book, because it is a romance.
Because it's a romance and we have our happy endings. Yay!
But it seems really cute. And I told myself I was going to read more romance this year.
Yes.
And I'm trying. So I'm going to give this one a shot. It seemed very meet cute. Seemed very different from what I would think of a contemporary straight heterosexual relationship would be. And you know, it sounds like a very kind of You Got Mail kind of theme to it too, which is my favorite romance that movie. So that one is called Love Lettering by Kate Claiborne. That's out now. The other book I'm reading, because I have to read a gay book or else I just don't exist in the world anymore, is Last Night at the Telegraph Club by Melinda Lowe. This is a YA book, and I want to formally apologize to all of the YA readers. I am so sorry I was so snobby and stuck up about YA for a really long time, but like, YA writers are doing so much progressive work within their community, and I never realized it until I started reading these like really good YA books. So Last Night at the Telegraph Club is about two women in San Francisco's Chinatown in the 1950s during the Red Scare. There's a 17-year-old girl named Lily who is questioning her budding lesbian sexuality. And she meets a 17-year-old Kathleen Miller, who is Caucasian. And she meets her at a lesbian bar called the Telegraph Club. And the whole plot is them obviously getting together, falling in love during the 1950s in the United States, where you're not supposed to be doing that to begin with. And then you have McCarthyism, because her father is a Chinese American, and he is now starting to face deportation because of his beliefs. And it is, and she's gay and she doesn't know how to express this, on top of, you know, being Chinese American in a time where it is not okay to be Chinese American. And it's, and there's just so much that is going on in this book. It's a historical romance. It is teaching me all kinds of things that I didn't know about lesbianism in the 50s. They allude to male impersonators. They talk about lesbian pulp cinema in this book. They're so, the world that Melinda has created in this, in just like these 400 pages, is awe-inspiring. And it's, they're building on these things that have been pulled from history and things that have been lost to history. especially for queer folks. And it's just, and it's a romance book. It's a very slow burn. And the Kathleen, the main female character, one of the main female characters in this book, she's a butch lesbian. And then you have Lily, who just like really is trying to figure it all out. And the way she describes what it is like to be a lesbian and not know, quote unquote, that you're a lesbian is very, I'm feeling deep connections to it from like, especially when I was a teenager growing up and questioning my own sexuality, it was just, wow. And it's so good. And this was, I keep telling my wife that I wish this type of book was around when I was a kid, like, because we didn't have, I didn't have this, you know, 20, right. 15 years ago. So I'm so glad that the kids nowadays get to read these books, because it's just so, I'm going to start crying talking about it. It's so good. It's, it's amazing.
I truly am in awe of the young adult section. Like, there are so many, especially in the last couple of years, there are so many beautiful books that tackle really difficult situations, really real situations, from all areas of life across the spectrum, that just truly, like, really gorgeous books that I am so glad exist for, you know, teenagers and young adults and even adults. You know, I still read a lot of YA. I read like 5 books last year, back to back to back, that were all YA. They were all people of color, both the characters and the authors, and they were all queer books, and they were all awesome. Like, they were all so good. So yeah. Yay, YA. So
those are the 2 books that I'm reading right now.
Hillary, what have you been reading?
Well, we already talked about The Echo Wife, which I recommend. I like that a lot. I have 2 other books to talk about. One is coming out on March 2nd. It's by Chris Whitaker. It's called We Begin at the End. This book has been blurbed by the likes of Louise Penny, Jane Harper, A.J. Finn, Wally Lamb. So those are all some pretty heavy hitters.
Wow.
This is a really terrific mystery. The main character is a 13-year-old girl named Duchess Day Radley, who is doing her best to make sure her very young brother, who's I think 6, or 5, stays alive, because they are the children of a single mother who is drug addicted and alcohol addicted, and is an amazing person, but is not keeping it together at all. Right at the beginning of the book, the mother is murdered, and that's the mystery: who killed the mother? Yeah, I'm just going to leave it at that. It's very moving, lovely, kind of heartbreaking, but bittersweet book. And I think it's, I predict that this will do very well. I think it's the kind of book that maybe people who like Where the Crawdads Sing would like. Mm-hmm. You know, it's difficult in terms of the subject matter. It's very sad. But it's also quite heartwarming. If you like a good mystery, this is a good literary mystery. It's coming out March 2nd. Yes. We Begin at the End by Chris Whitaker.
Yeah.
The other book I'm reading and I'm just devouring is called Small Time, A Story of My Family and the Mob by Russell Shorto. And this is nonfiction. Russell Shorto has written other nonfiction books that are about, you know, the Revolutionary War and early New York City and things like that.
Okay.
But this is a family memoir. his grandfather and his grand uncle, great uncle, were the top mobsters in this small city in the 19, from the 40s up through the, until he died in the 1980s.
Wow.
And he kind of knew that this is what was going on, but his father was estranged from his grandfather because he didn't want to have anything to do with the mob. So he goes and he recreates his family from the time they leave Sicily in the 1890s through until the present day. Wow. But the description of what a small city was like in America in the 1950s and 60s is, for someone my age, I'm 62, just fascinating. Mm-hmm. And if you grew up in any small city on the East Coast, I'm predicting, maybe any place in the whole country, you knew people who were in the mob or whose uncle was in the mob. And there were all these small towns, you know, these guys who like ran numbers and fixed horse races and stuff like that. And they always seem kind of amusing, but this book is like, yeah, they're not really so funny when you're up close to them and they're like breaking your bones and cheating on your grandmother and stuff like that. But really, really entertaining, really a good read, and so evocative of mid-century United States. Very, very worth reading. So those are my books.
That's awesome. Those sound great. So in our last episode, Hillary mentioned something about books that kind of like burrow into your heart, right? Books that just like stick with you and have just stayed there forever. And I wanted to expand on that in this episode. So we've sort of touched on this a little bit in the past. We've talked about like our favorite books from our childhood and things like that. But I wanted to kind of like look at some of those books that have, you know, lodged themselves into our brains and hearts, and look at kind of maybe why we think those books have stayed with us for so long, and also look at books that we're maybe reading now that we think down the line, like, oh yeah, this book is going to stick with me, I can tell. And just sort of look at like why we think that might be happening. And I also put this question out to our listeners and I got some really cool responses. So I'll bring some of those up as well. You know, some of the books that have stayed with me, books that I see them on the shelf and I get very nostalgic, or if a customer is buying them, I get very like, oh, I love this book so much. Oh, like, and I, you know, I think about them often. You know, you've got obviously Harry Potter played a huge role in my childhood. Alice in Wonderland, you know, that was my college thesis, and it just kind of like Alice follows me everywhere. Erin Morgenstern's books, you know, I had A Night Circus Wedding, and then With the Starless Sea, like those have just really kind of tattooed themselves onto my heart as well as my skin. And I was thinking about these books and why they have had such an impact on me. And I think for some of them, it depends on kind of like when I discovered them, right? Like Harry Potter was a very like coming of age story. I was the same age as Harry Potter when I was reading it. And it was this zeitgeist, right? All of my peers were also reading it. And like, for the first time, I wasn't just like, you know, the outsider who liked to read a lot. I wasn't just the bookworm. It was like everyone was reading it and I had like things to talk about with people. And granted, I still took it to like a weird level of obsession, but you know, it was a very like kind of community oriented thing. And I was kind of thinking about that in terms of some of the books that I'm reading now that I feel like these books are going to stick with me in a similar kind of way. have the same kind of community element for me. So The Invisible Life of Addie LaRue is one of these books where I read a very early copy of it, and a lot of my bookseller friends also read a very early copy of it. And so we were all talking about it, like, before it came out, and we're all anticipating, and writing reviews and hyping it up to people. And then it comes out and everyone's reading it and loving it, and our customers are loving it, and everyone's passing it along to their friends, and it's becoming this huge thing. And I feel so proud of it. It's like, I look at this book and I'm like, oh, like, I loved you when you were a manuscript. I'm so proud of you. Like, you're this fancy bestseller now. Like, look at you go, Addie LaRue. Good for you. And so I think for me, the books that really stick with me are books where I share the love and the sort of obsession with multiple people. It's like, it's this like kind of validating, like, oh, you love it too? I love it. Let's be friends and love it together. And also, kind of like a branch off of that, things like Erin Morgenstern's books, or Alice in Wonderland, things that I have a very personal connection to. It's like, I've become friends with Erin Morgenstern. With Alice, it was like, again, that was my college thesis. That was 4 years of my life just like diving so deep into this book. And then like, if you start to look for them, you find Alice in Wonderland references in everything. Like, when I say Alice follows me around, like, it's rare for me to read something or watch something where there isn't at least one down the rabbit hole reference. Like, she's everywhere. And so like, those kind of experiences also, I feel like, contribute to that, like, these books will never leave me, because like, all right, like, The Night Circus will never leave me, because yes, I read it and it was beautiful and the language was beautiful. And then like, my, you know, fiance at the time also really enjoyed it. And then we had a Night Circus wedding. And so it was like, oh, well, that's a cool like personal connection. But then it was like, on top of that, oh, now I'm friends with the author. So it's like, so there's that like community aspect and this very like personal, like, it's important to me and other people. I don't know. It's so that, like, for me is where this kind of comes in. And I was curious how you guys feel about books that stay with you. And then I'll bring up some of what our amazing listeners had to say as well.
So I wanted to kind of let people into books that have taught me how to be a person, which I don't really talk about too much. So the first one I want to talk about is David Sedaris's Me Talk Pretty One Day.
Yes.
There is the first essay in this essay collection is called Go Carolina. And it is an essay about him growing up as a child. He has a lisp. And he gets pulled out of his fourth grade classroom to go to speech therapy. And it's funny because he tries to like say things without an S sound in them. So instead of saying yes, he says correct. He likes to, he messes with the speech therapy teacher a lot. But he starts talking about the other kids that go to the speech therapy class. They're all homosexuals, or they grow up later to be homosexuals. And he makes these jokes. I don't know anybody who doesn't know who David Sedaris is.
Yeah, he's the best.
He makes these jokes that allude. He's a very good American humorist. The first time I read this essay, I was a sophomore in high school. And I know I wanted to write, but I was never very confident in how I was writing. And then literally like my 10th grade high school English teacher, she like Xeroxed these copies and stapled them like you always get when you're like in high school, right? And so we were all reading this together in class, and we all had a discussion about how an essay is written. And David Sedaris was the first essayist that I read where I went, wait a second, you can like take things that are funny out of your life and write them down in a funny kind of story-like way, and people will read them, and like you can maybe even get paid for them. So I love reading hilarious essays or essays about people's lives. I love writing about my life because this goofy stuff happens to all of us, and it's just the way you write them, and it's a universal connection for all of us. And David Sedaris is gay. And I remember this was the first author that I'd ever read in my life who even alluded to being gay, not even as a gay writer that I was aware of. And that's really, that's essential. That is essential to have, especially when you're living in a very rural part of New England and there's not a lot of gay icons, you know, back in 2002, right? Mm-hmm. So, Go Carolina was my first essay. Mm-hmm. And that's why I love Samantha Irby and all of these other essayists and whatnot. So if you really like Samantha Irby, please, if you have not read David Sedaris, definitely Me Talk Pretty One Day. Mm-hmm. He also has another essay in here called, it's about his brother, and it's about the rooster. And his brother is this charismatic, crazy bananas person. And he writes him with like, he hates his brother, and you can tell in this story, but he deeply, deep down loves him. Mm-hmm. He talks about his family and how kooky they are. So definitely David Sedaris, Go Carolina. It's the first one in the series. It's like 10 pages long. It's so good. Mm-hmm. The second book I'm going to talk about, it's David Foster Wallace's Kenyon College speech. It's called This Is Water. And I read this essay, I want to say when I was 19. And it is basically how to live a compassionate life. It's a college graduation commencement speech. It's obviously supposed to be lighthearted and funny and very touching and poignant. Whenever I have a terrible day or bad brain day, I go back and I read passages out of this book, because the way that he explains how people's thoughts should manifest on how to be a more compassionate person is really well done. And it's humorous and funny. And he uses all kinds of allusion, and it's so concise, and it's basically telling yourself that you are not the only person who lives in this gosh darn world, and like you need to step out of your own comfort zone and step out of your own head and perceive how other people in the world are interacting with you. And therein lies the way you can be more compassionate, is to basically put yourself in other people's shoes. Every time I pick this up, I just fall in love with it again, and it's so profound to me. I really like David Foster Wallace's work. I think he is incredibly smart. I think he was really good at his craft. I do think he died too soon. And yes, he might have had demons, but you have to separate the art from the artist. He's fabulous. Mm-hmm. The next one I want to talk about it's called The Stories of Brees DJ Pancake. This was a book that my biological dad gave to me before he and I stopped talking. Mm-hmm. It's a complex group of short stories that this young man wrote before he died. He is labeled as the next Hemingway. The way he describes the rural parts of the South where he grows up in West Virginia are stunning. There is a short story in here called A Room Forever that really touches my heart whenever I read it. It's a gritty man's kind of like short story kind of book, but it has these like textures of magical surrealism in some of his stories. It's just so good. And I read it whenever I miss my dad. And it's obviously very beat up, and I've had it for over 10 years. I absolutely love this book. It reminds me of my dad and the times that we had when I was a kid and how much I miss that. That's the stories of Bryce DJ Pancake. The last book I want to talk about real quick is a book called Siddhartha by Hermann Hesse.
Yes.
Which is pretty much the story of Buddha. Like, we're just not gonna, it's yeah. every, I feel like every high school kid except me has read this book. And the reason why it is touching my heart is I recently started reading this last month. And the reason why I started reading this last month is because my grandmother on my mom's side, she had to be put in a nursing home, and we were cleaning out her house, and I was pulling books off the shelf, and I never really knew my grandmother very well. We weren't very close. My mom is not very close to her mother. And so we were cleaning out all of her bookcases, and my mom asked me if I wanted anything from her bookcase. You learn so much about somebody through their bookcase and what they have kept and read over the years. My grandmother read a lot about President Lincoln for some reason. I don't know why. She's really into Watergate. Like, that was a big thing for her. And so it was mostly books that I didn't really care about. But this one, she kept. And my favorite thing about this is that she has annotated.
Wow, look in at this. That.
And highlighted stuff, and she wrote her name in here, and she writes these, writes in the book and notates it and highlights passages, and then I got to the end of the book, and then she wrote this wonderful piece about what this book had meant to her, and this is the only way that I could connect with her is through this book and through what she has written about this book in this, in the notations that she has put in here. And it's funny to me how her and I are pretty much the same person.
Wow.
And this is, I've never known. The only thing I remembered of her when I was growing up is that she liked coffee ice cream. Like, that's all I knew from her.
Yep.
And so I start reading this book and I start reading the notes and the passages in it. And I have connected so much to her in this little span of time that I ever did in my like 30 years on this earth. I just, you know, this is basically like a whole thing of, please, you know, don't ever clean out your bookcases and totally like highlight and notate things that you loved in your books. Like, I am a proponent of that because I would have never learned anything about the people that have raised me unless I started picking up their books and reading what they have written in them. And so that is like the four books that I am, that are connected to me personally. Books that are like that now for me. I mean, oh my gosh, there's so many. So Dune, we talked about.
I was going to say Dune. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, and I remember like, I remember the books that, you know, Ryan, I asked you once before I even started working here, like, what is one of your favorite books? And you handed me, Fangirl.
Yeah.
Loved it. Absolutely. And I didn't want to say that I loved it because I was like, I have a reputation to uphold, right? And so, yeah, I read that. And then you gave me Kindred Spirits, which is a Rainbow Roll.
Yeah, like short story.
Short story. And it was just so, it's so geeky and cute. And I loved both of them. And Hillary gave me a couple other recommendations when I was, before I even started working there. She gave me Stiff, I think. was Curious Lives of Human Cadavers you gave me. And When Smoke Gets in Your Eyes, which is the Caitlin Dowdy book that had just come out that year.
Because you had worked in a mortuary. So I was like, oh, you're into that kind of thing.
Yeah.
people, what do we got?
You know, I remember things like that. I still remember the first book Michael had ever recommended to me when I started working there. And I remember the book that Paul gave me was Bluettes, you know, like this is the way I connect to people in the world, right?
Yeah.
And so those are the kind of books that I thoroughly enjoy. Plain Bad Heroines is another that I keep thinking about that dang book like all the time, because it is a story within a story, and it is just layered so well, and it's so lush. And it was like one of the first lesbian books that I've ever read that don't, like, you know, kill their darlings essentially.
Right,
in this.
Right.
You know, there's Ocean Vaughn's book, On Earth We're Briefly Gorgeous. Like, it is such a beautifully mastered book. Mm-hmm. And those, it's just stories like that that don't normally get to see a lot of play time around them, that are going to be just classics in my mind forever. And like, and of course, Last Night at the Telegraph Club is going to be yes! one of those books, because there's just so much layering in these stories, and they're important. And I'm going to think about these books the rest of my life, or I'm going to carry them with me no matter where I go. So that's my, yeah. I'm surprised I got through that without crying.
You did great. Like, I feel like for you, it's like books that hit at a certain time in your life or are tied to a specific person, and, you know, an important person, or like like representation, like you know, the first time you see yourself in a book. That's awesome. That's great. Hillary, what about you? What makes books, what are some books that stick with you and why?
The book that I came up with, which is one of my all-time favorite books, is Tuck Everlasting by Natalie Babbitt.
Mm-hmm.
This is one of the most beautifully written, and this book is deeply moral. Mm-hmm. It is deeply meaningful. This is about how to be a good human being, and it's also about what it means to be human. And basically, the plot is, it's 1880. There's a little 10-year-old girl. She accidentally bumps into a family of people in her woods who are coming to check on a spring there that they had discovered 85 years earlier when they drank from it and never aged again. And they can't die. And they're all the exact same age they were when they drank from the spring. And it's destroyed them. And they want to make sure that nobody else ever drinks from the spring. And a bad man comes along and figures out that the spring is there, and he wants to make a boatload of money off of it. And he doesn't care that it will ruin the entire world, and he has to be stopped. And that's the basic plot of it. It is about losing your innocence in one sense. It is about being grateful for every moment that you have in life and understanding that life isn't really worth living unless you know you're gonna die someday. It is also about being brave. If you have to do something scary and bad to save the world, you step up and do something scary and bad to save the world. And also that making a buck is not a good end in and of itself. And that it is okay to stand up to people who say, whatever I do is fine because it's paying my shareholders. It it doesn't matter if I pollute the world. It doesn't matter if I kill people. It doesn't matter if I lie and scheme to become a powerful politician. It's all good in the end. This is a book that teaches you when bad times come, like what we've just been through in the past 4 years, that as a human being who cares about other human beings, it is your job to stand up and say, no, that shall not pass. Mm-hmm. It is not happening. Mm-hmm. Can you tell I feel very passionately about this?
Yeah, it's absolutely.
So that's Talk Everlasting. And if you have a young child, get that book and read it to them. If you don't have a young child, pick it up and read it to yourself. Yeah. I guarantee you, you will. I was reading my husband the end of it, and I was sobbing. It is so moving. Yeah. But I went to my shelves and looked through my books and thought, what books are here that resonate for me in a similar way? And I came out with two. One is Station 11 by Emily St. John Mandel, which is, it's a book for these times. It's a book about an illness that kills 99% of the people in the world and what happens to the people who remain, and how Shakespeare saves the world. And really, it's about art. It's about art saving people. Mm-hmm. And it sounds terrifying, and it is in a lot of ways. There is a very bad person in this book that has to be stood up to. But it has one of the most beautiful, hopeful endings you are ever going to read. And again, a book that I just sobbed at the end of it. Really terrific book. And in my heart, I feel like it has a parallel to Talk Everlasting. And then the other one is, I've forgotten about this book, and it's such a wonderful book. It's The Shipping News by E. Annie Proulx, Proulx. Annie Proulx is best known probably now for Brokeback Mountain, the short story she wrote that was turned into the movie. Mm-hmm. This book is such a strange and wonderful book. It begins with this 36-year-old third-rate newspaper man who's described as unbelievably ugly. His wife disappears with his two daughters. He gets a phone call saying his wife has been killed in a car accident. Come and get the daughters. And he comes to find that his wife was trying to sell his two daughters to a pedophile so she could run off with her boyfriend. Ugh. Okay. Horrible, right?
Yeah.
It starts from there and then becomes one of the most lovely, hopeful books you're ever going to read, and you'll laugh out loud. He has a great aunt who swoops in and says, look, we have a family farm in Newfoundland. Get those girls. We're going there. And she grabs him and takes him out to the hinterlands of Newfoundland. And he begins writing for the Shipping News, which basically is, you know, a newspaper that features what freighters are coming and going, as well as photographs of bad accidents and things like that. But he winds up saving the day for several people. There's beautiful descriptions of landscape. He finds love. His crazy daughters get less crazy. It actually won the Pulitzer Prize and the National Book Award the year it came out. This book, like Talk Everlasting, is also about facing something terrible and rising above it and being a good person in spite of it, and finding great comfort and solace in friendships and family and nature. So those are my two.
I feel like for yours, there's this great through line of like hope and overcoming evil and kind of this like morality and hope in the face of like darkness.
You know, I've said this before, and I had a hard childhood. My father was a terrible alcoholic, and I got great solace from books. I read. I'd stay up all night reading from the time I learned how to read when I was five. And I think books get you through when you feel like life is terrible. Books teach you, yes, life is terrible, but life is beautiful. And so that beauty is coming, that love, that friendship, those things are coming to you, and get ready for them. Be ready for them. And also, I think books also teach you morals. You know, they teach you how to be a good human being. I think everything I know about friendship, I probably learned from Winnie the Pooh. You know, so read to your children.
Yeah, definitely.
Definitely.
And read to yourself.
That totally ties into some of the responses that we got from our listeners. You know, we had one person who said that a book that really stuck with them was How to Be a Woman by Caitlin Moran.
That's a great book.
Yeah, she said it really changed how she viewed herself and the world around her, and she was grateful for that shift in perspective. So again, there's that kind of like, you read it and it just like impacts you, right? Yes, there's representation, or, you know, just this shift in perspective and seeing the world in a different way, which is like so powerful. A lot of people talked about language in books, how certain books, just like the way they're written, they just like, it just sticks with them. Joe, our coworker, had a really beautiful thread on Twitter about that. They said, I started thinking about this and now I can't stop, but I think one of the things that makes a book meaningful for me is the language. I can pick out specific lines from literature that stopped me dead the moment I read them. More than anything, words burrow their way into my head and bounce around forever. I once read that we refer to memorizing words as knowing them by heart because we feel a desire to make the words part of us, part of our bodies. A good rhyme or turn of phrase will stay with me forever. When I first read Hamlet my senior year of high school, it was my first experience reading Shakespeare, and I got to Act One, Scene Two, where Hamlet says, quote, a little more than kin and less than kind, and quote, I am too much in the sun. My world shifted. I thought, no one told me you could do this with language. I remember sitting on the floor of my kitchen reading To Be or Not to Be aloud to my mom while she made dinner and just being like, can you believe such art exists in this world? And I've always found words so important. As a kid, I memorized the first page of Harry Potter because I needed those words with me always, which I did that too. One of the most important texts for me is Richard II. I read the deposition scene and was blown away. I rewatched that scene, David Tennant, obviously, regularly because the language is like intricate lacework. Obviously, plot and character are very important as well, but the language is often what makes a book stay with me forever. Oh, Joe, killing me. And then like this person said that Little Women is a book that stuck with them. They read it as a kid. Is the first book they remember having bought for them at a bookstore. And they've read it multiple times in the 40 years since they've got that first copy, and there are lines and scenes that come back to them when they need it. So again, there's that like connection of hitting you just at the right point in your life. Erica Robbins says, The Patience of a Dead Man by Michael Clark. It's a recent release, but since picking it up, she can't stop thinking about it. It's a horror read with absolutely amazing characters, and it's so vividly stuck in her head. And like, that's another, like, there are books that I'll read that like, there will just be scenes that like I never forget. Like there's a, I think it's like a one line description in The Subtle Knife, which is the second book in his Dark Materials by Philip Pullman. It's like one scene, maybe one line, where the main character takes the knife, the subtle knife, and he's like feeling around in the air and he feels a catch in the air. He feels the knife catch on something and he pulls it down and it slices through worlds and it opens into another universe. And like that one description has stuck with me because when I read it, I could like feel it. I could feel the way that it would feel to have that knife catch in the air. And like that just has always stuck with me. Like it's I love it. Let's see. My friend Corrigan said Walk Two Moons by Sharon Creech was such a good book, right? She says, so real in dealing with tween emotions and trauma, so full of lessons about kindness and quotable AF, which yes, it is. You know, and I do think that's, again, comes back to the language. And then we had some on Instagram, Lilith, actually, your daughter, had a bunch, The Golden Compass, because literally everything about it just. Yep. Mm-hmm. Yep. Agree.
Yeah. We listened to those tapes all of those books driving back and forth to Canada, as well as Harry Potter and a bunch of Neil Gaiman. So we were and Terry Pratchett.
Yep.
But yeah. Those Golden Compass books, his Dark Materials are amazing.
They're gorgeous. She actually has some Gaiman and Pratchett as well. She says Ocean at the End of the Lane because growing up is hard, which that's one that I read really, really quickly and just like that one burrowed in. That one just stuck with me.
Yeah.
Thief of Time by Terry Pratchett.
Oh, I love that book.
Mm-hmm. She says Order for Order's Sake is the antithesis of humanity. And then she also says The Outrun by Amy Liptrot. It's about healing in nature, which I'm vibing hard with right now. It's just like,
I don't know that book. We'll have to look that up.
You'll have to look that one up. But yeah, like things that just, again, like are hitting you at the right time or for whatever reason, they just stick with you. So I just love that. I love that our listeners were participating and shared some of the things that stick with them. I wonder, when you read a book, do you have a moment where you're like, this book is going to stick with me? Or is it not until later that you realize like, that one really, I think about that one a lot. Or, you know, is it like when the first time you like sell it to a customer and you have that like visceral moment where you're like, wow, no, I really loved this book apparently. Cause I feel like I'm a mix of all three. I feel like sometimes I'm reading it and I can tell like this book is hitting me in a certain way. Like this is, you know, hitting at the right time. And other times it's not until I like pass it on the shelf and I'm like, oh, I really loved that. I realize that it has kind of still been there and I haven't even realized it.
I feel like it's a mix of both.
Mm-hmm.
There are books that have been handed to me and I'm like, yes, this is going to stay with me. And then there are books where I read them and I put them down, but then I like can't stop thinking about. I can't. A good example of that is Kindred by Octavia Butler, which I've talked about before on this show. That was the first book I read for Gibson's Book Club before I got hired at Gibson's. Mm-hmm. And we read that book and I feel like it was one of the first books I read that a Black woman wrote. So it was pretty powerful for me in that regard. But I, to this day, I keep thinking about Octavia Butler stuff. I just can't stop thinking about Kindred. Like I think about it at least once a week. I just love that book. And it got me to a point where I'm like, I haven't read any of her other stuff. I should really read that this year. And here we go. I've got Fledgling. I'm like grabbing all of her backlist. I have she did a graphic novel of the Parable of the Sower.
Oh yes, cool.
So I got that, and then it kind of like spirals out in this genre, right? So you start reading in a specific genre, and you go, oh, she wrote a foreword to this book, so maybe I should try to read that book. Or, you know, this person wrote a foreword to this book, maybe I should try to read that. And then that's how it dominoes out.
Yeah.
Right. And that's why I never was a sci-fi fan growing up. And then I started reading books like Octavia Butler. And then I started reading Left Hand of Darkness, which was great.
That's a good one.
And yeah. Then the afterword is by Charlie Jane Anders. And I was like, who's that? So I picked up City in the Middle of the Night and I was floored. I still think about that book, right?
Yeah.
So yeah, it's a mix of both where I'll look at a book on the shelf and go, oh, I love that book so much. I really hope somebody buys this for me. Or you read it and in the middle of it, you're just like, this is it. This is going to be in my back pocket for the rest of my life. And I'm going to read it when I ever need to feel a certain way. So that's me though.
For a book to really stick with me, the end has to click.
Mm-hmm.
I have to get to the final pages and say, oof, the writer stuck it. Mm-hmm. You know, they landed both feet firm and it makes sense. And often I'm wiping away tears or mm-hmm. I'm smiling or for me, a great book has the perfect ending. And that is a very, very hard thing to do. There are so many books. Right now, I've made a deal with myself that I will not make something a staff pick until I've read it all the way to the end.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes you're reading a book and you're loving it. And then you get to the last chapter and you realize the author just didn't even know how to end the book.
Mm.
And it's wrecked by the end of it. So for me, the books that really stick with me are the ones that have great endings. Although I will say there are some books that move me in some way that I really like them very much. I would say they're very good books, but I'm not necessarily going to recommend them to other mm-hmm. people because they don't have everything. There are some people that I think are beautiful writers, but there's not one stitch of humor in. And I feel like for a book to be really round for me, there has to be at least a little bit of humor in it, because life is like that. No matter how tragic things are.
Yeah.
Something ridiculous happens. You know, you're at a funeral and someone bends over and they split their pants. You know, there's always something funny.
Yeah.
And so a book is never going to be great for me unless it's round in that way.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Ugh. Books, man.
Right?
Books are so great. Good. They're great. And they're so like, man, like we got one of the comments on our Twitter thread, because I had asked like, what's a book that, you know, has stuck with you and why? And someone was just like, a book, and then listed like four. but you know, they said like Dickens' Tale of Two Cities depiction of historical period as well as human nature still resonates. The Elegance of the Hedgehog by Muriel Barbary is so real and relatable. Kafka on the Shore, Murakami for Escape, all A's, if not A pluses in my book. And like, that was such a, like, what, that's one of those comments where I'm just like, yep. I have like list upon list upon list of books that like, you know, in that one comment, it's like, well, this one resonated because of human nature and this one resonated because it was relatable and this one resonated because it was an escape. And this, you know, it's like, I don't know. I just think it's really cool that like, I guess it's cool that everyone like has an answer for like why a book resonates. And it's not just like, oh, I don't know, books, I read them and then they're done. It's like, no, like everyone has, at least book people have that like, that at least one that they're like, oh man, I read that and I never forgot it. And I think it's beautiful. That's what's so kind of cool about this topic is that, like we're reading books right now and we're you know, we might not even realize that we're reading something that's going to stick with us, that 10, 15, 20 years down the road, we're going to be telling people about this book that we read at this one time in our life that just really resonated and just burrowed into our souls. Like, I just think that's really cool. Like,
it's a good explanation for the people who say, why do you have so many books?
Yes. Yes.
You're not a book person.
Yeah. Yeah. Literally, it honestly feels like pieces of my soul. Like, you know, I got these wall-to-wall bookshelves, floor to ceiling, wall-to-wall for my basement. And organizing the books and putting them on the shelf and standing back, I just was like, that is like a piece of my soul. That's like a part of me. I just want to like be next to them all the time. Which is such a like style thing. I can't even handle it. Big thanks to the lovely folks who answered my questions on the internet last night about, and I do want to do a special, again, shout out to my friend Corrigan. She has a podcast as well called Jack of All Graves. It's a horror podcast, but it's really more about like the horrors of just humanity. And like every episode is so vastly different from the one before and the one that will come after. And they just find these like really interesting horror things to talk about, and I'm obsessed with it. So it's Corey who lives currently in New Jersey and Mark who's over in the UK, and they just talk about, you know, these topics. They do deep dives, and it's fantastic.
I will have to check it out.
We're gonna try to do a crossover episode at some point so I can talk about horror novels and things with them. And but yeah, I just had to give them a shout out because they're great. Corey's been a big fan of The Laydown. She's been a big supporter of us. So thank you, Corey.
Hey, Corey.
And then I just wanted to real quick give some store updates, kind of. So for Valentine's Day, Elizabeth and I organized a blind date with a book program where, you know, we picked 6 titles and we wrapped them up all pretty and wrote little descriptions on them, but we hid the titles and no one knew what they were. And it was so successful and people liked it so much that we're going to make it a permanent thing. So that I'm very excited for that. So we got some cool stuff going on at the store. And of course we are open. I've been getting people asking that. So just to reiterate, we are open. You have to wear a mask and no more than 40 people in the store at a time. But come on in. We're there. You can browse. You can come see the booksellers. It's been so nice to have customers again and to like interact with people again. And I will say for folks who either don't live close to the store or don't feel comfortable coming to the store, we have so many shoppable lists on the website now. We've gotten really good at building them. And so every time we come up with a display, we turn it into a list on the website that you can shop, including for this podcast, by the way. There's a link right on the homepage to shop The Laydown, and every book that we talk about, it's separated out by episode, and every book we've ever talked about on the podcast is there. You can click it and buy it. But yes, we have lists of queer books, romance books, horror novels, nonfiction. You think of it, we've got a list for it. All that to be said, you know, check our website all the time because we're constantly updating it and figuring out new fun things that we can do to adapt to this strange new world that we live in. And that includes virtual events. We're still doing virtual events. We have usually at least one a week, sometimes more than that. And we record them. And so, you know, we love for you to view them live, obviously, but if you miss it or you know can't make our virtual event, we also record them and upload them to our YouTube channel, and there are links on the website. But do check out those virtual events. Check out our events calendar because Elizabeth she gets some good events. we got some cool events coming up. And I will, without spoiling anything, I booked a very cool author interview for I think March. I won't say who it is yet. You'll have to stay tuned, but you're going to be very excited.
We have a super early book club this month.
Oh, yes.
March 1st is book club this year.
I noticed that. Yes.
Month. March 1st is Deacon King Kong.
Nice. That's yeah, right.
Which is a terrific book. It sticks the ending, people.
Yay!
It'll make you laugh. It'll make you cry. It's fully round. Awesome. And talk about language. It is a wonderful, wonderful book. And it's out in paperback now.
Yes.
Came out in paperback this month. So Deacon King Kong, March 1st, 5:30. Be there or be square on Zoom.
Do it. And of course, I would be remiss if I didn't talk about our sponsor of the pod, the beautiful folks at Libro FM. You know, I say it every month. I say it all the time in the store. I'm constantly yelling about Libro FM because I love them. But, you know, audiobooks are amazing. It's an amazing way to consume literature. And, you know, we love them. They love us. They support indie bookstores. They do great things for indie bookstores. And if you haven't made the leap yet to Libro FM, go to libro.fm/Gibson's Bookstore. When you start your account, use the code LAYDOWN at checkout. They'll give you 3 audiobooks for the price of 1 credit. What are you waiting for? There are thousands of audiobooks to choose from, as evidenced by the 1,600 audiobooks that are just currently sitting in my phone.
Deacon King Kong actually is amazing audiobook. Go, if you don't have time to read it, download it from Libro FM. We'll be ready for book club by March 1st.
Mm-hmm. Pop in your headphones, do your chores around the house, listen to a book. You'll feel so productive.
The reader is fantastic for that book. It is so good.
I love a good audiobook narrator. It's, you know, you're a bibliophile when you have a favorite audiobook narrator. Mine is Exie Sands.
Oh, yeah.
They're amazing. They read Played Bad Heroines and Wanderers and something else that I just read. I don't even remember. So many things. I love them. So check out Libro FM. They're fantastic. You, as always, can email us about the podcast at thelaydownpodcast@gmail.com. Our website is gibsonsbookstore.com, and we're also on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook, and we'll put those links in the show notes along with all of the books that were mentioned during this episode. Thank you all so much for listening. Don't forget to subscribe so you'll know when we upload our next episode, and consider leaving us a nice review. Until next time, we'll see you in the stacks. Bye!
Bye.